Thank you, Dr. Behrendt. Certainly a pleasure to be down here. It's a pleasure to be anywhere at this time of the year, right? We're still alive. Certainly had a nice drive down this morning, really. It wasn't bad at all. The roads were clear, probably better today than they have been in many of our trips, so certainly no complaints at all, except my car was complaining most of the way. You could hear the difference in the engine. It just wasn't warming up, I guess, properly. So I stopped in Fox Creek and shoved some paper down in front of the radiator, and then it kind of toned down a little bit. So hopefully the engine won't just quit on us sometime or something like that. But certainly wasn't a bad trip at all, seeing as we saw a moose and we saw a whole bunch of elk on the side of the road. And if they can stand this weather, I guess we can. So certainly we were up in Grand Prairie for a teachers' convention Thursday and Friday, and never had a plug-in. I think it was minus 37 or 39 or whatever it was, and went out and turned the old car over, and it was, even with that synthetic oil, it really had a tough time getting going. So we're starting better than the car, so that's good. Isabel just handed me this before services here, an article that you wouldn't hardly believe you could be reading. Christ-like Harry Potter wins church's seal of approval. And you read some of the statements in here, it's just really unbelievable. So since the first Harry Potter novel was published in 1997, poor Harry has been the target of conservative Christians who burned his books and accused the bespectacled wizard of opening a door to the occult in youthful minds. But now Harry is getting some backing from surprising sources. Now, does this really surprise you? Doesn't surprise me. Not with the way Satan is working the world today. Vatican officials weighed into the debate recently at a news conference on a document cautioning Catholics about the New Age movement. Reverend Peter Fleetwood, a former official of the Pontifical Council for Culture, told journalists the author J.K. Rowling is a Christian by conviction in her way of living and in her writing. I don't see the least problem in the Harry Potter films. A film reviewer for the U.S. Catholic Bishop's website has also told parents Harry Potter is so obviously innocuous fantasy that his fiction is easily distinguishable from real life. Harry uses his magical powers for good to fight evil. Now a Protestant minister and academic who specializes in the theological aspects of contemporary literature has put the final seal of approval on Harry. John Killinger says Harry is not a devil or a witch, but a Christ-like figure. It's really unbelievable. He says, the four Harry Potter novels are not only among the best reads of all time, but also a modern interpretation of the gospel. That's a good one. A modern interpretation of the gospel. Yeah, pretty modern, all right. He says, there are many similarities between the lives of Harry and Christ. Just as Herod tried to slay the infant Jesus, so the evil Lord Voldemort attempts to kill Harry at birth. And just as Jesus conquered death in his final encounter with evil at the cross, Harry triumphs in the fight over the Sorcerer's Stone and in the cemetery in the climax of the fourth novel, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Like Christ, Harry is also ready to sacrifice his life for others. He jumps on the back of a troll and thrusts a wand up its nostril to rescue his friend Hermione, or whatever it is. I don't read too much of it, so I don't know how to pronounce these things. He drives off a large black snake to rescue Justin, another fellow student. Killinger says the Potter mythology grows out of the Christian understanding of life and the universe and would have been unthinkable without it. Rowling has a university degree in French and classics, and Killinger says it also shows in her writing. Hogwarts, the school for young wizards, he says, is a kind of Olympus. Where they shot this, by the way, was a cathedral in England. It's one of the cathedrals in Gloucester, I believe, is where they shot the whole thing. He says, Hogwarts is a kind of Olympus where the headmaster Dumbledore is Zeus and the professor Minerva McGonagall is Athena. Allusions to Greek and Latin phrases are also found throughout the books, and so are bits and pieces of Greek, Persian, Egyptian, and Roman mythologies. I could easily say in the words of the old popular song, I'm just wild about Harry, writes Killinger. Rowling belongs to the Church of Scotland and said she attends somewhat regularly but is not big on religion as rules. I could have kind of figured that out, you know. Religion, you don't want religion to interfere in your life, right? Why would you want something like that to interfere in your life? Last year she told a reporter the fact she is a Christian seems to offend the religious right far worse than if I said I thought there were no God. Anyway, it's kind of, I think, illuminating when you read, you know, just the way the churches are going and the way the churches view something like Harry Potter. I would suggest what they should really do is just read their Bible, find out what does the Bible actually say about the occult. And as you know, we went through this not too long ago, and I went through some sections just from the scriptures on you know, what do you do about the occult? Do you mess around with the occult at all? Do you check your astrological signs or whatever it is, you know, and go through your horoscopes? Should you do that kind of thing? Well, read your Bible. Find out. You know, it doesn't have to be our opinion or anything like that. Just check the Bible and see what does God say. And then we'll find out. But unfortunately, a lot of people, religion is only something they study, something they read about, something they write about, but very little to do with their lives. And that's the unfortunate part of it. Now, anyway, let's get into the sermon. I thought I'd read that because I thought it's pretty shocking to read something like that with the churches having that view. I titled the sermon today, What is Our Focus? What is our focus? We've always heard people say things about be focused. You know, we need to focus on something. I have the responsibility of supervising some students in the high school up there. And another teacher has his prep time because I supervise there. Now, I asked him, what should I do with the kids? Because there sometimes there's maybe two or three, sometimes there's five, times six. You know, how do you approach it? It was basically it's kind of like a study time. And I thought, well, how do I approach it? Are they stuck in there? They can't move? Or are they allowed to get up and leave? And so I was just asking him, you know, how do you handle it? And he said, quote, just try to keep them focused somewhat. Try to keep them focused somewhat. So I thought, focused. Okay, on what? They were focused, all right, on everything except schoolwork. How the party went on Saturday night, how drunk so-and-so got, how the hockey tournament went, how many fights there were. So that was the sort of the focus, and then the girls, of course, got into some of their topics as well. And so I thought, well, I guess we have to change this a little bit. I think it's a study period where you should probably do a little bit of work. And so it was interesting. It is important to keep focused. We know that whether you're a prize fighter, an athlete of any kind, a businessman, teacher, explorer, anyone, generally you must keep your focus to be successful. You're focusing on the task at hand. Recently we had the convention up there, and the lead speaker, the opening speaker, talked about Shackleton, Ernest Shackleton, and what he went through. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the story. But I'm going to get the book and read it. After hearing what he had to say, I really want to get the book and have a look at it and read basically the whole story, because he gave us bits and pieces of what Shackleton was able to do. And it is so mind-boggling to know what he managed to do with his crew. They basically were stuck for 2 years in the Antarctic, and they all lived. Not one of them died. He had a whole group of men, 27 of them. And it was quite interesting that the view I got, or at least the message I got out of the talk, was the fact that Shackleton kept everybody focused. He kept them focused on what they were doing. And he managed to bring them through, which is so far beyond the imagination. You know, can you imagine just, even if you lived in Canada with a tent, you know, for a couple of years outside, you know, can you imagine just being outside? Well, they were in the Arctic, they were the Antarctic, which is 1,000 times worse than anything we've ever seen, with the winds and the storms that come out of that area. And I'm getting the book, if you beat me to it, great, lend me your book. Or if you have a copy, lend me your copy. But I want to read it because it is so inspiring, because of the fact that the message that came through is that he kept focused on staying alive. He kept everybody focused. Even when they were out there in the middle of nowhere with nothing to do, he had them get up at 8 o'clock. They had to be up by 8 o'clock. They had to go through all of their chores. There was nothing to do, basically, stuck in the middle of nowhere. But they had to do all of that thing, and he kept them going, and he kept them focused. And I was thinking, you know, it's very similar to a Christian. Very similar to a Christian. We have to be focused on certain things if we're going to survive. You've got to focus in on the right things, because some Christians haven't made it. They're already finished as a Christian, unless somehow they can repent. It kind of brought us back to ground zero in a way, because we met some people up in the North area that we used to know who were in the church 20, 25 years ago. And we visited a lady this week, hadn't seen her for a long time, but we ran into her at the funeral, and she wanted us to come over. So instead of going to the bar with all the teachers, we went over to visit her. And it was kind of neat, because she was so happy to see us, and one of her granddaughters was there, and I had blessed her way back about 25 years ago, or 23 years ago, I think she was. And she came up, and this lady had told her, you know, that, oh, here's the minister who blessed you way back and such, and she was all excited, you know, and it was really, really neat. But when we got into, you know, what are you doing right now? Where do you go for services? Well, she goes to, Baptist? Maybe a Baptist or whatever it was, church on Sunday. And I had talked to her just a minute ago, or a few minutes before this, about how we keep the Sabbath still and how we go to the holy days. And because she was in the church at that time, and we were familiar with all that kind of thing, and she used to come down to the feast with us, or at least we'd meet her, see her down there, excuse me. But it was just sort of, all of a sudden, the light was sort of out in a way, but she was sitting there and she said, yeah, I do go on Sunday, don't I? It was really sort of, you know, like, hello, you know, what happened? What happened? Somewhere along the line, the focus was gone. It was lost. The focus of what you're supposed to be doing as a Christian was lost somewhere. All of a sudden, that day that was so important to all of us at that time, to her as well, that particular day has somehow lost its meaning. Lost the focus somewhere. Right now, we look around us, we see the distractions of the world, the problems that are there, the possibility of war in Iraq. It's like nothing else is happening in the world all of a sudden. The war in Iraq is every talk show, every bit of news, every news broadcast, almost every newspaper is full of it. And it's sort of like the focus is all right there. How did, you know, when you think about it, this is how it happens, isn't it? 6 months ago or a year ago, it was something else. Now, 6 months from now, it's probably going to be something else, unless they don't go to war and they're still threatening it. But it's amazing how focus changes. And in your life, it's the same thing. Certain things become really important, especially if you're going through a trial, right? If you're going through some kind of trial, all of your focus then in your mind, just about all of it goes towards that one particular thing. And that's all that's on your mind. You're focusing on that all of the time, it seems like. It just jumps back into the mind all the time, at this problem or this difficulty, whatever it is. The focus changes. And it's interesting. Let's go to Matthew 13, verse 13. If we couldn't focus on the right things, where would we be? Let's go to Matthew chapter 13. Say our focus gets onto the wrong things. What happens to people when they cannot focus, they can't see, or they can't hear? Because that can be what will happen. That can happen to people. If they get something else that gets their attention and they forget to focus in on the right things, you can fall back into the point of view where all of a sudden you don't hear or you don't see the things you need to hear and see. Some people can do that. Being in the church for a period of time, they can read the Bible and read over scriptures that at one time would have had a big effect on them. But as time goes on, they don't see or hear the message anymore. It doesn't seem important to them. When we first came into the church, you first start studying scriptures, bang, you grab a hold of them and you're hanging on to those things. You're just like you're gripping something and there's nobody going to shake you. You prove the Sabbath is the Sabbath and that's it. And nobody's ever going to shake me from that. How does that happen that 25 years later, somebody's keeping church, going to church on Sunday? Almost your mind sort of goes, you know, well, what happened? How could that happen? Somehow the focus, if the person went back and read the scriptures again, which day is the Christian Sabbath? And it's very easy to prove, would it have the same effect? I've talked to people recently who were very solid, I thought, 20 years ago, some of the people who would be the most solid in the church. If I had a guess in the congregation, I would have written down a couple of names of families that I thought would have been absolutely rock solid, would never, ever vary from the truth. And where are they today? When you talk about what's going on with the weather and the world and everything, oh, we just go through cycles. Just a cycle. And you kind of, your mind sort of says, what happened? What happened? 20 years went by. Somehow things got out of focus. Something somewhere took them out of focus. It's like I got these glasses, right? Everybody's just about got glasses. So you take them off. I can see who you are. You see. Well, I can still see, sort of, because I'm only a little bit nearsighted. I'm not too bad, but reading is where I need these things. But if it's out of focus, there it is. You know, the message is disappearing, isn't it? If it's out of focus, somehow you can't quite see it, and it gets out of focus. With Christians, that can happen. Some of the stuff that is clearly focused and solid and strong in your mind, if you're not careful, after a period of time, can get out of focus. And it's not as important as it used to be. You know, at one time, you know, it's like God saying, get back to your first love. Get back to that. If you can get, you know, do whatever you need to do to get back to that first love, where you desire the Word, you desire to really understand, you really read what you're reading. Because there are people who can read what we read and don't get it. Just don't get it. I had an interesting chat with a fellow who's kind of religious. He's one of the teachers up there. And we drove, gave him a ride to Grand Prairie. And in the car, he started talking a little bit about different things about the Bible and different aspects of the Bible. And he said, and the writings of Paul, he said, are really hard to understand. They're really difficult to understand. Most people can't get them, you know. And I was thinking, should I? And I thought, no, I'm not going to actually bother. He didn't ask me, you know, why do you understand it or how can you understand it? He just said they're hard to understand. And I had talked to him before in the past, so he knows what we believe. But I thought there's no point in really getting into it, because no matter what I do, no matter what I show him, he is not going to get it. And I know that because he's already religious. He's got his own views. He will not see. And there's an old saying, there's none so blind as those who won't see. And it's absolutely true. No matter what I showed him, there is no possible way that that guy could understand the truth. He just can't get it, can't see it, can't focus on it. He could read the same scriptures that you and I read, but he won't get what we get. Matthew 13, verse 13, therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand, and in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. You won't see it no matter what you do. They cannot see it. That's hard for us to, you know, to get into our minds to understand. It's difficult. Because no matter what you do, you cannot change somebody's mind. God has to do that. They cannot focus on what we focus on. We zip into a scripture and we read it. Oh, yeah, okay, that's interesting. I need to change there. I need to be a little more diligent. I need to try to change that, overcome. They'll read a scripture and say, oh, that's interesting. And they go on to another one. That's interesting. And they go on to another one. So you have religious people who think Harry Potter's fine, because they haven't really focused in on what does the Bible say about the occult. What does it say about Satan? What do you think he's going to use? You know, ask that question. What do we think Satan's going to use to try to convince God's people that he's harmless? What's he going to use? A picture with the red guy in underwear with a pitchfork? That's a joke. You see, Satan's even behind that, because it makes him a joke. He's not dangerous if he's funny. That's why they put a lot of humor into these sitcoms, where you have all kinds of weird garbage passed off as a normal lifestyle. Garbage and filth that is passed off as normal because it's funny. Ha ha, we make jokes about it. It happened yesterday. at this conference, where this guy got up and he was entertaining in the closing session. He's making jokes about all kinds of stuff that shouldn't be even talked about. Wrote a song about one particular thing. Now, it shouldn't even be talked about or mentioned in public, ever. Yet he made a joke out of it, makes it funny, so everybody laughs. Then they can accept it. That's how you get things accepted. And Satan is like that. He's tricky, he's sneaky, he's the most evil being that you could ever imagine, but he's made stuff into a joke. And he's made things like the spirit world into an innocuous, harmless, supposedly harmless attempt. And what's he really trying to do? Well, he's trying to destroy. That's what his name is. That's what he does best. So let's go on here a little bit. It says there, the hearts of this people in verse 15 have grown dull. They've grown dull. Some of them might have understood more even earlier, but the hearts grow dull. We know people that that's happened to. Things, they've grown dull. They can't focus anymore on what's really important. They think, oh, well, you know, we've heard all this before. It happens. You know, sad to say, their ears bear hard of hearing and their eyes they've closed. This is verse 15. Lest they should see with their eyes. Now it says, who closed them? They closed them. They wouldn't hear. They closed their eyes. Lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears. Lest they should understand with their hearts in turn so that I should heal them. We could go and talk right now to people that we knew 20, 25 years ago. And go through the same scriptures that I went through back in my sermons back then, they'd have no effect on them. Because they've chosen to close their ears and to close their eyes to certain aspects of the truth. They've made that choice. It's not important, or they got trapped, or they got fooled by some doctrinal discussion. So something's happened. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. For surely I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. Let's go to John chapter 9 and verse 3, and we'll find something very interesting that Jesus says when he's about to heal this blind man. John chapter 9, verse 3. He's about to heal this fellow, and he says something very interesting. This was the guy who was blind from birth, it says in verse 1. And they asked this question, whether he had sinned or his parents. And Jesus said, nobody had sinned here. But he says, verse 4, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. And verse 5, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Now, it's interesting. He said he was the light. You know what's impossible to do? You cannot see anything without light. You can't see a thing. If it's the light's all gone here, it disappears, pitch black, you'll see nothing. You won't understand a thing. That's what he's getting at. Without Jesus Christ, we won't see anything. We won't know anything. We won't understand anything. We won't be able to hear. We won't be able to see. Without Christ, we're nothing. We're finished. Let's go back to John 1 just for a moment. We'll get a background on that again. Light is extremely important. John 1 and verse 1, basically teaching us all also that there is no Trinity, no such thing as a Trinity. John 1 and verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him. Christ was the creator. Without him, nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. Jesus brings the light. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. You cannot understand even the truth of God without Christ opening our minds. He can be there. People can use his name all the time. They can refer to them and talk to them about themselves as though they're religious leaders, etc., etc., but they won't understand anything. Without God's Spirit and without a direct miracle from God, they won't understand a thing. So they can write articles like that and quote things about the Bible and say that this is a modern interpretation of the gospel. And they haven't got a clue. They haven't got a clue, really, what the gospel is all about. Because Christ hasn't opened their minds, hasn't called them. There is a man sent from John, from God, verse 6, whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which gives light to every man coming into the world. So Christ is that light. Let's go back to John 9 again, and verse 6. And Jesus does something very, almost, you'd say, I was going to say silly, but not silly, but ironic. He does something very strange. John chapter 9 and verse 6. This same blind man, when he said these things, he's talking about himself being the light of the world. When he said these things, he spits on the ground and he makes clay with the saliva. Now, couldn't Christ afford oil? Right? Don't you think he had anointing oil? Why would he get a piece of dirt from the ground? It says clay, of course. Gets a bit of clay, right? Spits, mixes it all together. And the people are watching this and they're going, what is this guy doing? And then he takes the material, makes clay with the saliva. He anoints the eyes of the blind man with the clay. This is really way out, isn't it? We don't do this when we come around if you have a sore eye, right? And you want to be anointed. Well, hang on a minute. You know, get some clay and mix it all up. There you go, you know, stick it in your eye. Very strange. Most people would just say, what in the world? He's lost it. He's lost it totally. What is he doing? He said to him, now go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. So he went and he washed and he came back seeing. Now, why did Jesus do this? Think about it for a minute. What's the symbolism? What's the symbolism? Who's the clay to start with? Right, we're the clay, right? What does Jesus do? He takes some water, which is the Holy Spirit, and he mixes it with the clay. And what happens? Bing! Your eyes open. Symbolism is fantastic. But most people would say, what's going on with this? He's crazy. He's gone nuts. He's mixing spit with clay and sticking it in people's eyes. The symbolism is absolutely unbelievable. It's just fantastic, isn't it, when you understand it? God takes the clay, he adds the water at baptism, and guess what? We see spiritually. Or you and I would never know any different than anybody else, but the people who are writing about Harry or whatever, you wouldn't know any difference whatsoever if we didn't have that done to us. If we weren't used, taking that clay, a bit of clay, like, and mixed with water, put it on the eyes, boom, you open, your eyes open. So verse 8, let's go on though and see what happens here. Therefore the neighbors and those who had previously seen that he was blind said, isn't this he who sat and begged? Now get this. This guy, all he did was go down and wash, right? And he came back. I'm sure he had the same clothes on. Probably never got a haircut. Probably had the same beard. Walked back. And these people say, some of them say, oh, this, hey, that's him. That's him. And the others say, well, he's like him. Now, any one of you that walked out of here and went and had a wash in the washroom and came back, most of us would say, yeah, I think I know who that is. Sure, listen. But these people were so flabbergasted, it was so far from the realm of reality, they just couldn't admit it was him. They just couldn't do it. Well, it looks like him. He's like him. He's about the same height. He's got the same clothes on. But I don't know. It might not be him. if you went through this in a, you know, if you went through this in a sort of a sitcom, people would think, you're nuts. You're nuts. What are you talking about? Of course it's the person. Nope, they're going on. And he says finally, I am he. That's me. That's me. Look, I'm here. So they say to him, oh, well, how were your eyes open? I mean, this is so far beyond reality, right, that they're sitting there. Whoa, what happened? You've been there, sitting there. We've seen you. How did this happen? So he answers, a man made called Jesus made clay, anointed my eyes, and said to me, go to the pool of Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and I received sight. So they said to him, well, where is he? And he said, I don't know. Verse 13, so they go and find the religious people. This is really eye-opening. They brought to him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Verse 13, now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. It was the Sabbath. Guess what they're going to try to do, of course. So the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight, and he said to them, he put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see. So some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. Their own particular view, see, of the Sabbath. Somehow, guess what had happened to them? Got out of focus, right? Somehow, something got out of focus somewhere. Because nowhere did it ever say you couldn't heal on the Sabbath. It doesn't say that anywhere. There's no scripture anywhere that's even close to that. They had got out of focus somehow, so they had made their own rules. And what it did is it put them completely out of focus with their own Creator. With their God. They couldn't recognize their own God. This should have been their God, I should say. They couldn't recognize God. Christ, who was God. They couldn't recognize him because they had somehow got out of focus. I had a pair of binoculars one time, and somehow the binoculars had been knocked against something, probably dropped them, and they were a little bit out of line. And you'd look at something, and you could sort of see it, but you'd see kind of two images, and you couldn't quite focus it. Awful. It's terrible. But it's a pretty good analogy. When things get out of focus, it's terrible for the person. The fruits are awful. You cannot see what you should be seeing. And these individuals had gotten out of focus somehow. So it's amazing how they pulled this off. Anyway, what they did. So they say to the, let's go to verse 16 there. This man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Go on. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? Good question. If God isn't with this guy, you know, I could see it if he was doing some phony miracle, right, and teaching them to go move away from the Sabbath, don't keep the Sabbath anymore, then they should have had, see, if they were focused on the scriptures, then they would say, yes, okay, this man is not, you know, not a Sabbath-keeping man, this guy's a liar, he's trying to get us away from the, no, that wasn't what happened. He was doing good on the Sabbath, and they were trying to use it against him. Certainly did not qualify him as a sinner anyway. So there was divisions among them. Some were thinking correctly, some were thinking wrong. But there was this division. So they said to the blind man again, verse 17, what do you say about him because he opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet. Nobody has ever done anything like this before, right? A person who absolutely can't see anything, and he's standing there in front of you, perfect, with his vision, perfect vision. Well, I don't know about this, you know. You kind of, how could religious people get so ridiculous? But that's what happens when you become religious, oftentimes. You become unrealistic and ridiculous with the conclusions you come to. Instead of saying, what does the Bible say? There's all kinds of people who will not drink coffee, and they won't drink alcohol, and they won't drink this, and they won't do that. There's nothing in the Bible about that. There's nothing anywhere that says you cannot have a drink of wine, a glass of wine. In fact, the Bible says it cheers even God to have a glass of wine. But it's sort of puzzling in a way. If you're going to be religious, why not study the Bible? Find out what it actually says. Why have religion if you're not going to use the Bible? And yet that's what happens. Here were people who were going against Christ, against God. They were trying to say that he was a sinner. Verse 18, the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they called the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind. Pretty good witness. But by what means he now sees? You see, the symbolism is great too, right? Human beings are born blind. We're born blind to God's truth. You gradually, you just grow up, you don't know anything about the truth of God unless somehow God opens your eyes. We're born blind, if you want to put it that way. You can see physically, but not spiritually. But by what means he now sees, this is verse 21, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him. He'll speak for himself. His parents said these things because they feared. They knew what religious people were like, you see. They didn't want to lose their positions. For the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was Christ. Isn't this awful? Isn't this sad what religious people do? He would be put out of the synagogue. If anybody comes to a different conclusion about this than our conclusion, you can get out of the synagogue. Does this sound familiar? Did anybody ever get kicked out of the church because they didn't agree with something? And they might have been right in some cases. They might have been correct in some cases. Sad though, but that's what religion does. It tends to make people blind towards things. So you end up with religious groups all over the place, right? Somebody starts off and they start a certain kind of teaching, etc. And so you get a whole bunch of followers, and then pretty soon they start fighting, right? And then they split. How do you think we got so many churches? Because they split and they split and they split. People want control. That's what it boils down to. The Pharisees wanted to control this. They didn't want anybody saying that this guy was the Christ. Otherwise, they were going to lose their position, they thought, lose their power and their position and their followers. You know, this is a common theme that runs through religion in many cases. Therefore, his parents said, they were afraid to even answer the question. Ask him. He's of age. You can ask him. They were careful. So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. This is just so unbelievable, isn't it? But this is not unusual. Really, this is the kind of funny stuff that goes on in religion much of the time. Stuff that is not Christian at all. How do you make righteous judgments? What did Jesus say about making righteous judgments? If they had only followed what he said, you know what he said? How do you make a righteous judgment? He said, I don't do my own will. I do the will of the Father. If we only went back and said, what does the Bible actually say? What does the Bible actually say? Should you hold grudges against people? Or should you forgive? Can a church group not patch it up if you have two groups in the church that are fighting about stuff? Sure you can if you follow the Bible. But you can't if you follow your own will. And that's what Jesus was saying. He had righteous judgment because he followed the will of God the Father. He looked for it. It's in the Bible. You wouldn't have an argument over Harry if you go through all the scriptures about the occult. You wouldn't have an argument over it. Just go back and check them all out. God tells you don't have anything to do with it whatsoever, whether it's Harry or anybody else. He answered, verse 25, and he said, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. This guy was a little getting trying to be careful, I guess. One thing I know, he says, that though I was blind and now I see, he says, hey, everything else might happen here. I don't know what it is, but I used to be blind. Sitting there begging. I used to be blind. Now I see. Isn't this wonderful? I'd say, yeah, probably. Most people would say, wow, that's just fantastic. That's so marvelous. Yet even a miracle here couldn't convince these guys that they were wrong, because they had religion, emotion. When you get emotion involved in religion, look out. You have problems sometimes. So they said to him again, what did he do to you? Carry on and on and on, right? How did he open your eyes? He answered and said, I told you already. You didn't listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? Uh-oh, look out, boy. So they really go after him. Verse 28, they reviled him and said, you are his disciple. We are Moses' disciples. Verse 29, we know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he's from. The man answered and said to him, why, this is a marvelous thing. This is unbelievable, he says, that you do not know where he's from, yet he's opened my eyes. He's done an unbelievable miracle. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. So what was their answer? You were completely born in sins, and are you teaching us? We're the great religious leaders here. Are you teaching us anything? How can you possibly teach us anything? We know everything. Forget it. So they threw him out. Couldn't quite take it, right? Couldn't quite take correction. See, that's the key, isn't it? It's one of the keys. No matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what you think, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, if you find it in the Bible, do it. If it's there and God tells you to do it, do it. If it isn't there and he tells you not to do it, then don't do it. But don't let ourselves get out of focus. For I'm the great leader of this group now, and nobody can tell me anything. Whether it's good for the brethren or not, that's irrelevant. I said, see, that's what happens with these, oftentimes with leaders. They forget, wait a minute, where did you come from? Wasn't there a time when you didn't know anything? Go back and think, the time when you wanted to be baptized, what did you think? What was your attitude like? What did you understand? Go back there and say, that's where you really are coming from. We don't know nothing. We don't know anything compared to God. We don't know anything compared to God. We know a little bit that he's opened our minds to, just a little touch. Who are we? See, we got to keep focused. What was my roots? What were my roots? Think about that. What were my roots? Where would we be today had God, you know, we could actually go and write a book ourselves. Where would you be today had God not called you? Where would you be? Jail? Dead? Lots of times when we could have all been killed, any one of us, we could have been killed by somebody on the highway or whatever, and some little thing happened that we didn't get killed. You know, there's lots of scenarios, isn't it? Where would we be if God hadn't called us? We have to sort of ask the question, how blind can people be when they choose? The Pharisees here were completely blinded, totally blinded, because they chose to be blind. They made the choice, we are going to do it our way. We are not going to be convinced by even an unbelievable miracle. Something so marvelous has never been done before. They'd never seen it before. It was just so shocking. Unbelievably, God opened the eyes of a man who had never seen before. And they didn't have any effect on them. They chose to be blind themselves and wouldn't change. And we have to ask that question, how can anybody be that blind? So let's ask a couple of questions here. What do we focus our eyes on? What do we do as Christians to make sure we don't lose the focus? Somebody once wrote this, a lady named Edelman. She wrote, there's no free lunch. Don't feel entitled to anything you don't sweat and struggle for. If you see a need, don't ask, why doesn't somebody do something? Ask instead, why don't I do something? The world needs more shepherds and fewer sheep. Never work for just money or power. They won't save your soul or build a decent family or help you sleep at night. Don't be afraid of taking risks or being criticized. If you don't want to be criticized, don't say anything, don't do anything, and don't be anything. She says, don't be afraid to fail. See, you have to do something. You could always say, it's up to the minister, or my husband, or whatever, or my parents. You know, it's easy to do that and then not do anything. But we got to ask, what is it? What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to focus in on? How can I be sure that 20 years down the road from now, if we're not dead, how can I be sure I still will think the Sabbath is important, that the holy days will be important, that God's way of life of overcoming will be important? What do I focus on? Well, I'll give you a number of things today to try to focus in on. Let's go to, first of all, Jesus' example. Focus on Christ's example. What did he do? What did he do for me? How did he change my life? Let's go to Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 14. Hebrews 4, verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our confession. For we do not have a high priest who cannot sympathize with our weaknesses. See, Jesus knows what we're like. He was the one who's worked with us. God the Father called us. Jesus has worked with us. He's changed us, helped us. He intercedes for us. He knows what it's like to be human. He knows what he went through. Somebody tried to tell me one time this next phrase didn't really mean what it meant. This is a minister I had known for a long time. And this was the Inquisition that took place before I was kicked out. And he said, well, that really doesn't mean that. The verse says, but was in all points tempted as we are, yet without sin. He said, oh, well, you don't think that Jesus was tempted to be a homosexual or something like that. Well, that's not what it says. It didn't say that he was tempted in every single sin that there was that's ever occurred on the earth. Basically, it's a phrase, just means he was tempted in everything that he faced, like we are. He was tempted as in all kinds of different things. Doesn't mean he was tempted to fly to the moon and jump off and see if he could hurt himself. I mean, you could come up with silly stuff like that. But that was the sort of the philosophical arguments that were coming out. It just means what it says. He was in all points tempted as we are. He was tempted like we are. He went through all kinds of stuff like we go through. But yet without sin. Do you believe that? I believe it. It's in the Bible. We better believe it because it's there, right? So the person, what happened to this particular minister, guess what happened to him? Somebody had worked with his spiritual glasses and scratched them all up. You know what it's like? You got a scratch on your glass, yeah? It's always right in the middle where your eyeball is, right? Right there. So somebody had taken his glasses when he wasn't looking, just scratched them all up. So every time he put them on then, he's trying to read that, and he's, yeah, I thought I knew what that meant. I'm pretty sure I knew what that meant, all my spiritual life, but I guess it doesn't mean that. Somehow, that's the conclusion he had come to. So he was trying to convince me that it didn't mean what it said. Oh, well, Christ. You see, the whole thing goes back to the fact that they were trying to prove something. And they were trying to undermine everybody's faith, undermine my faith and all the other people's faith as well, so that they could get their particular way. Not God's way, not the Father's will, right? What do you do to make righteous judgments? What do? Everybody knows. You do God the Father's will, as Jesus Christ did. You check and see what is his will, and all you got to do is read it. He gave it to us. It's all here. And all we got to do is read it. The will of God is such. And that's what we should be doing. When the Bible says something, God tells us, we all know this by heart, right? Live by every word that comes from the mouth of God. And where is that? Here. He wrote it all down for us. So we just simply follow that. So he says then, let us therefore come boldly. You don't have to come sheepishly. You don't have to come there and say, oh boy, I don't know. We can go boldly to God, to the throne of grace. Because we need that grace every day. You got to have forgiveness every day, every minute of every day, or we're dead. So we can then trust in God that he's got the ability to forgive us. No matter what our mistakes are. Jesus even said, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. He knows what we're like. He knows how weak we are. But he knows we're trying. That's all you got to know. And then you can go straight to him, no matter what has happened. You can go straight to God. You can ask for forgiveness with confidence and trust without any question in the back of your mind. Oh, I don't know if he's going to hear my prayers. That's ridiculous. God hears our prayers. All you got to do is repent and go to God. We can go with boldness and confidence. He says so. When he tells us we can do that, he means it. Go there with boldness that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. When we need some help, God is going to intervene. He'll be with us no matter what the problem is or what the trial is. So we ask the question, do we focus on Jesus and his ways? We need to focus on Jesus Christ and his ways and ask the question, are we like them? Are we like him? Do we follow those kind of guidelines and directions? When we make judgments, do we search for God's will? You make a judgment of somebody, do we search for God's will? Do we go and say, well, what does God say about making a judgment or condemning somebody or being angry with somebody or having a grudge against somebody? What does God say about that? Or what does he say about if you got a problem with somebody? What do you do? What does he do? You should talk about it to everybody else, right? Isn't that what's happened? Isn't that what's happened countless times? Over and over and over again, gossip and stuff going on about people and everything. When every one of us knows, you don't do that. You go to the Bible. No, you don't do that. You go to the individual if you got a problem. You don't sit around and discuss somebody without them being there. And that's wrong. That's not biblical. When it's not biblical, it won't be blessed. There'll be problems. So we focus on Christ and his way. Let's go to Matthew 22. How does Jesus approach the truth? Matthew chapter 22 and verse 16. These scriptures are very inspiring, actually. Because you know what somebody else said about Jesus Christ. Matthew 22 and verse 16. They sent to him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God in truth, nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of men. What did that tell you about Jesus Christ? What would it tell you as a minister? Does it not tell us that Jesus is our example? That we teach the truth no matter what? No matter what? No matter if somebody's going to come in with a sword and cut your head off, you still teach the truth. That's all that God wants us to do. Make sure we teach the truth. Now, you don't purposely go out and offend people or anything like that. But when it comes to some kind of a situation, you speak the truth, no matter what. And God will take care of the other stuff. Luke chapter 20, verse 21. Again, here's the way that Christ handled things. Luke chapter 20, verse 21. Again, people came to him. And they asked him this question. Teacher, we know that you say and teach rightly, and you do not show personal favoritism. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Another guideline, isn't it? If you're a leader, if you have any kind of responsibilities, you don't show personal favoritism. That's wrong. Christ wouldn't do that. He doesn't play favorites. He says, but you teach the way of God in truth. That's what Christ was known for in his physical life when he was here on the earth. And so he did that, and he's our example. We teach the truth, no matter what. Okay, let's go to another thing we can focus on, another major thing. We need to focus in on the promises of God. One of the things that will keep us going is sort of like you do with children. You've got to have something to motivate them. You go in the gymnasium with these kids and you ask them, go ahead, climb the rope. Why? Sometimes ask the question, what do I get? If I climb the rope, will you buy me a Coke? You know? So once in a while I'll do that. I'll buy them a Coke or whatever. But they have to have some kind of a motivation. If you just climb the rope every day for a year, probably not all that exciting. But if you have a little bit of motivation of some sort, so what I did is I made up a program. I call it the Iron Man Challenge. I don't want to buy them all Cokes when they climb the rope, right? So I say, okay, here's the Iron Man Challenge. Here's what you have to do. I'm going to test you for 1 minute, see how many chin-ups you can do for a minute, and then I record them all. How many push-ups you can do for 1 minute, record them. How many sit-ups you can do in a minute. How high you can climb the rope. Get certain marks. If they get to a certain piece of tape, they get 10 marks. If they get over that 1 foot, they get one extra mark. If they make it to the top, they get 20 marks because it's 20 feet high. So then if you can climb it without using your legs, just your hands to the roof, you get an extra 5 bonus marks. 2 kids can do that. It's unbelievable. You ever try to climb a rope? I could do it when I was about 13 or 14, but I can't do it now. It's a little bit different now, 200 and X number of pounds. And I can't quite make it to the roof. But these couple of them can. Oh, hand over hand, boom, boom, right to the roof. It's 25 points. So then after it's all over, I'm going to tally the whole thing up in every class. I'm going to have one winner in the girls and one winner in the guys, the Iron Man of the class or the girl, and they're going to get a prize. Each of them going to get a prize. So, but it motivates. You got to have that motivation. So God certainly gives us plenty of motivation. He promises us certain things, and it's good to always keep these things in mind, make sure that probably the greatest motivation, I think, for most of us would be the fact that God is always going to provide food for us. Right? Right? Look at us. You know, I came down, I had 2 donuts on the way down today, you know. But that's sort of the way it is, isn't it? If there's anything else you can kind of put up with, a little bit of cold, then I'll get a sleeping bag and an extra sweater, or go cut some more wood. Lacking something like maybe my car quits and so I have to drive my truck only, you know, or whatever, you know. You sort of could get by with all of that stuff, but food. And so God knows that. And he says, look, folks, I'll take care of you. Matthew, you know the story in Matthew, he talks about, you don't need to worry about tomorrow. I will take care of you. I'll make sure. Let's go to a couple of other scriptures. Psalm 111, verse 4. God knows where we think, where our thinking comes from. Psalm is usually from our stomachs, right? The way to a man's heart. We all know that one. Through his stomach. Psalm 111, verse 4. He has made his wonderful works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion. He has given food to those who fear him. And he will ever be mindful of his covenant. He's going to remember that. He made a covenant with us, right? Every one of us, you are baptized, you've got a covenant with God. That's what it was all about. A deal. You do your part, and God will do his part. Just like signing an agreement. You sign this agreement. If you provide a certain amount of service, I will give you a certain amount of money. Similar thing. God, if we do our part, we take care to do as much as we can and grow and do our jobs, God will take care of us. He says he'll provide for us. Let's go to Job 5. Here's an interesting verse. Job chapter 5. Job is sort of moaning a little bit and going along, but the truth comes out. God inspired his words. Job chapter 5, verse 11. He sets on high those who are lowly, and those who mourn are lifted to safety. Kind of interesting. God tells us that we better mourn. We should be mourning about the world, what's going on in the world. Mourning about those poor folks out there. You know, it's kind of interesting when we see what the world is facing. The Kurds today, they were talking about the Kurds in northern Iraq, and they said, some of them made the comment that we're preparing for the war, for a possible war, by making, you know, one room in the house safe for poison gas, so that they can all run into the one room. It'll be all sealed off. They're buying gas masks and all that kind of stuff. And one of the Kurds said, well, it really doesn't matter what happens now because it couldn't be as bad as what's happened to us before. That's what their lives are like. People who have been had their mothers and fathers poison gassed by Saddam Hussein. You know, that kind of stuff. And they think, well, it couldn't be as bad as it's already been. Their children probably died. Some mothers and babies. And so how could it be any worse than that? That's the way they think. Well, God knows that. He knows what's going on. He knows we should be mourning about some of this stuff. Let's go to verse 20. In famine he shall redeem you from death. That's pretty exciting, isn't it? God knows where our thoughts come from. It's usually our stomachs. And he says, and in war from the power of the sword, God will protect and take care of us. He says he'll never leave us, never forsake us. So we need to stay focused on those things, even if there are some problems and difficulties. When difficult events take place, here's one that I thought was interesting. I don't usually read the Dalai Lama very much of what he says, but I thought this was a good quote. It says, unfortunate events, though potentially a source of anger and despair. See, what happens oftentimes when you get a problem, you get mad at God. Right? That's a sort of a normal thing. When you start having a problem, some kind of a difficulty, you sort of get mad at God because you think, well, why did you allow that? Why didn't you change that? Why didn't you do this and this and this? See, Job, remember, he had the best reason to get mad of anybody you'd ever think of, right? He could have gotten angry with God and cursed God, didn't do it. So what happened? He was blessed. He could have easily had turned, he was even counseled to do that, right? His wife counseled, curse God and die, you idiot, what's the matter with you? But he didn't do it, he wouldn't do it. Somehow Job kept the focus, right? Through all of that, that's pretty admirable, isn't it? You go through loss of your family, loss of your home, loss of all your money, all your valuables, even down to the loss of your health, and he still stayed focused. He was focused on the fact that God gave him everything. God has the right to take everything away if he wants to. God made us. He can take our lives anytime he wants to. He has the right to do that if it's for some particular purpose. And so, this is interesting. Though potentially a source of anger and despair, these unfortunate events have equal potential to be a source of spiritual growth. Whether or not this is the outcome depends on our response. Depends what we do. We have the choice. We have the choice of making whatever decision. Okay, a third thing. Being focused. Always try to keep things in perspective. Try to keep things in perspective, right? Very important part of vision is perspective. If you only have one eye, very, very difficult to tell how far away things are. One of the teachers up there got his eye put out. It wasn't even his fault. He was in a bar just sitting there, I guess having a drink, and heard a commotion going on. He turned around like that, bang, right in the eye. Lost one of his eyes. And then, funny, I ran into another one the other day. He only had one eye, but what had happened to him is he hit a moose on the highway. He was driving along. Another truck hit the moose, flipped it in the air, and it landed right on his windshield. And he was in, you know, hospital for like 4 months, but he had a missing eye. And I was thinking, you know, very, very difficult for somebody like that. I know what it was. He was telling me about his accident, but the way he lost his eye was somebody in the gymnasium gave him a two-hander with a hockey stick, with a ball hockey stick, got him right in the eye, put his eye out. He's showing me all the scars from the moose accident. Somehow we got on the subject of moose. I don't know how we did that. By the way, I saw a moose and a whole bunch of elk this morning. It's nice driving down here. But when you see something like that, and you see a poor guy now, he can't do things. There's no way he can play sports to the same degree because you can't tell how far away the ball is. You can't tell how far away people are. It's very important to keep things in perspective. In our case, we have two eyes, spiritual eyes, and we can see perfectly because God has given us those spiritual eyes. But it's important to keep them in focus, in perspective. Always remember, 95% of the world or more would think they had died and gone to heaven if they could switch places with any one of us. It's a good way to keep things in perspective. No matter what our situation is in Canada, no matter whether, you know, we're retired or whether we're working or whether we live in a mud hut someplace, you know, whatever. No matter where our situation is, what it is, most people in the world, by far the majority, if they could switch with us, they would do it in a second. Because we've got one of the most incredible lifestyles, countries to live in, that anybody could ever have. There are so many things that we just take for granted, we're used to. We're complaining about the gas prices and the electricity prices, right? And rightfully so. Why have them high if you don't have to have them high? You know, we own the gas, but what do? They put it on a free market, sell it, rip in huge royalties. That's why that's why individuals don't mind if the prices go up. They get huge royalties. And they're not really hurting except for losing a few political points. That's why they're doing what they're doing, even though we own the gas. Why should it be that price, that high? It shouldn't have to be. But if you keep things in perspective, even though the gas prices are high, the electricity prices are going up, we're still so well off compared to the world. Many people are, for years we sent out magazines and then we found out, why is the subscription rate going so high? They just go up. You don't even have to advertise. Well, because they were papering their walls with the magazines. They were using them to paper the walls in many countries, in India. Because the glossy material, it was really good quality paper, right? Very expensive paper, very thick, glossy paper. It was terrific. Put it on the walls. It even helped, keep the humidity down and everything else, I guess. So the subscription rates were going out of this world. And, wow, this is fantastic. Everybody's going to come in the church. Nope. They're papering the walls. So super. So we helped them anyway, right? We should ask another question, keeping things in perspective. It's sort of like those binoculars that I had. When you have a pair of binoculars, you sort of can look out there and you can see whether something has horns or not. And I mean, that's pretty important. But you know what else the spiritual eyes do? See, the spiritual binoculars, when you look out, you can find out whether somebody's got horns too. Whether there's some satanic something going on with Satan poking his little horns up and showing up somewhere. Somebody's not quite the way they should be, teaching stuff that isn't quite right. God's spirit is like those binoculars, like your glasses. They help to bring things into focus. So when somebody now is going to do a miracle, somebody's going to do a miracle in the future, and it's going to look pretty convincing, maybe calling fire down from heaven, you got your spiritual glasses on, it's not going to take you out of focus. It's not going to make your eyes go out of focus. You're going to say, but what does he teach? Does he teach the Sabbath? Does he teach the holy days? Does he believe the Ten Commandments are in force? All you got to do is look at a few things like that and see your spiritual eyes, your spiritual glasses just zero you right in right away as to whether he's correct or not, no matter what he does, no matter what kind of miracle they pull off. How did Moses keep going? Let's go to Hebrews 11, verse 27. Hebrews 11, verse 27. How did Moses keep focused, going in the right direction? Interesting the phrase that's used here. Hebrews 11 and verse 27. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. Okay? Right away, he had the kind of confidence that he could do what he needed to do. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. That's how Moses survived. He endured by putting on his spiritual glasses, and he could see God. He saw God though he was invisible. He kept his eyes in the right direction. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. Faith, confidence, spiritual eyes, he saw God is what he's saying. He saw him, though he couldn't see him, he saw him. He kept on going. Of course, he did see God anyway. But we don't see God physically, but we certainly can see him spiritually, even though he's invisible. Fourth major point on keeping focused. How do you keep focused? This one might surprise you a little bit. This will help you actually keep focused. It never fails to do the trick as to keeping you focused. And it is the responsibility of service. Serving. Serving somebody else. What happens is as soon as you serve somebody else, you go out of your way to do some serving of some sort, it gets your mind off yourself immediately. Almost always does. Because when you serve somebody else, when you visit somebody else, for instance, who's sick, you come out of the hospital and you say, boy, am I ever happy to be healthy. Boy, am I ever glad. I'm glad I don't have to go through that. Man. When you go and visit somebody who can't hear, The lady we visited this week can't hear. Can't even hear me, hardly. I got a big enough voice I can usually make anybody hear me. But I can sit right in front of her. She's got hearing aids. And I'll talk to her and she, you know, tries to read my lips and tries to, okay, you know, the way we go again. And but all of a sudden, you see, I come out of the house and I think, boy, I'm glad my ears work. Can you imagine how that would change your life? One of the reasons why she quit going to a certain church was she couldn't hear the sermon. You know, she still can't, but it's interesting how it works. But when you come out of there, when you go to the hospital, or when you come out of a situation like that, right away you feel really grateful. It helps you go back to square one. You think, I'm so physical. My ears, you know, I'm only kind of like an explosion away from deafness. You know, I went in, when that happens to you, it happened to me one time through my own stupidity. But I thought there was a muddy day and I wanted to shoot my rifle. So I go out, take my station wagon. I think, ha, here's a light, a good idea. The light went on. I could lay down in the back of my station wagon because it's muddy outside. That way I won't get muddy. I don't have to lay on the ground. But you want to have a nice rest, you know. So I got this target and I put it up and I got in there and I laid down inside my station wagon with the back door open. And I start shooting, you know. And it was quiet out there. There was nothing. I finished shooting, got in the car, turned on the radio. And the radio wasn't working. It didn't work all the way home. It's this stupid radio. What's the matter with this stupid radio anyway? And I got out of the car and went, what? I couldn't hear for like, I don't know how long it was, but it was quite a while, like a day or so. I could not hear anything. I was in the back of this thing and all the explosion, I guess, just hit my ears. But when my hearing came back, I can tell you I was a very grateful person, really grateful. Because you think when you're deaf like that, can you imagine how that changes your life? It's just, you know, or blind, you know, you think about it and hear, you know, incredible. We have people who have that problem. They're, you know, partially deaf or whatever, or blind. They know what it's like. So when we serve people and we do things like we do, God kind of reminds us of our humanness, and it's good for us. All of a sudden, we feel very humble again. We're human beings. We could easily lose an eye. I played hockey lots of times without a helmet, without a face guard. Could have happened to me anytime. You could have had a stick in the eye or something. You just don't ever think about it. That'll never happen to me. That'll never happen to me. But it does happen to people. So always remember our responsibility of serving. Galatians 6 and verse 2 is one scripture to always keep in mind. Bear one another's burdens. Bear one another's burdens. And so fulfill the law of Christ. It is a law. When we serve and we help, that is fulfilling the law of God. There's a lot of scriptures about that. One is about Romans 14 and verse 19, that we are to pursue the things which make for peace and the things by which one may edify another. Pursue those things where we can actually have our minds then on helping others. Instead of the normal, we're always thinking about ourselves. Human beings are good at this, right? We're always thinking about ourselves, what we're going to do here, what we're going to do there, our hopes and aspirations, what I'm going to do, how I'm going to be after I'm, you know, another 5 years and where I'm planning on being. And God says, think about others. Think about doing things that will help others edify one another. It's good for us. It's actually good for us. Okay, let's go to one more. Stay focused on God's way rather than the world's way. Watch that your glasses don't get colored with the world's way of doing things. The world can affect us like that quite easily. You start thinking the way the world, and you start looking at things through your glasses that are more like the world's focus than God's way. Don't ever drift away from God's way. Stay focused on His way. It says in Ecclesiastes 1 in verse 8 that the satisfaction that we get will never be fulfilling if it's just through the world, through what we see, what we hear, things that are around us, the physical things. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 8 says, all things are full of labor, Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. The physical does not satisfy, is what God is saying. We've got to be spiritually tuned. Try to do the spiritual things, helping one another, etc., serving God, doing whatever we need to be close to God. Because the physical side of it, the physical world, will not satisfy us. It just won't. It's like buying some particular thing you want really badly. Then a year later, it just sits there. You know, we've all done that, right? You buy something, maybe it's a juicer. This really special juicer you saw on television. And it does the job. I mean, it'll just even invent apples and create them for you or whatever. And you want to buy this juicer. So you buy it and you use it for a while and you use it for a while. And then pretty soon, it's sort of in a cupboard down there. And you got something else. And sort of, you know, we've had garage, I think our garage has been full of stuff like that over the years. You buy something and then you don't use it. Like exercise machines, right? Right? Exercise. I know I'm really getting older because I've got exercise machines and I never use them. Anyway, not true actually. I use one. But the other thing is, keep focused on the fact of why we understand. Understand why we understand. Keep focused on that. You don't understand because you're something great. We don't understand because, ha, I'm an intellectual. I've been to university. I know Greek philosophy. That's not why we understand. We understand because God has been merciful enough to make us understand, to call us, to open our minds. That's the only reason. Yet how many people begin to think they're something great? That happens. People think they begin to think they really know a lot. I know that scripture. I don't have to check on that one. You know, a guy actually said that to me one time. I asked him, you want to look at my Bible? This is a college even, way back in college. Oh, I know. I offered to let him read my Bible because he didn't have his there. And we were doing a thing, it's club, you know. I said, well, here, you know, I just moved it over so he could see it. Oh, I know that scripture. I don't need to look at that one. You know where that guy is today, I could tell you. We were talking about him on the way over. Sad. But that's what happens. Understand why you understand. The only reason we're here is because of God's mercy, his love and kindness to us. Psalm 111 and verse 10. Psalm 111 and verse 10. Good to be reminded of these scriptures. Psalm 111 and verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's why we understand. God has humbled us. He's given us a certain fear where we understand that without God we're nothing, that we would be nothing, we would be nowhere. Then he says, a good understanding have all those who do his commandments. See, why the person in the car with me the other day couldn't understand the truth, one of the reasons is there's no way they'll keep the commandments. You explain it to them, they won't do it. It's not important. Most religious people, if you told them about the Sabbath, they could understand it intellectually. And we've had people, I'm sure, who understand things intellectually, but they don't understand it spiritually. They don't grasp it spiritually to the depth they need to grasp. So when something comes along like a trial, they get pulled away. Their focus isn't in the right place. Somehow the focus just slides away and they focus on other things. Okay, seventh, last point. We need to focus on the truth of God. Focus on the truth of God. Don't let somebody say to you that it's good enough to go to church on Sunday. Long as you worship God. See, there's the philosophy comes out. All these different philosophies that people have. Well, as long as you worship God on one day, what's wrong with that? And that sounds good. They're very convincing. Oh, so-and-so, well, they could be in the first resurrection because they're doing as much as they know. It's just that the Bible doesn't say that. That's all. The only problem with that, it sounds good, it's clever, but the Bible doesn't say that. There's only one way you can be in the kingdom of God. The first resurrection. Only one way. So focus on the truth of God. John 4, verse 24. John chapter 4, verse 24. We need to focus on the truth of God. John 4:24, God is spirit. Those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. It must be spiritual glasses that we're wearing. We've got to have them. God has to give us the spiritual glasses or we're not going to understand. So don't ever think that we can just kind of float along in the dory along on the current. It doesn't work that way. We've got to constantly be seeking God, seeking his way, seeking his spirit, stirring up his spirit. We've got to constantly do that. Otherwise, we could be shipwrecked too. Paul said so. All the work that he did, he says, I could be shipwrecked if I wasn't careful. I could end up losing the truth. A couple of other scriptures about the truth, I'll just read them to you. John 8, verse 32, you shall know the truth. The truth will make you free. And it certainly does. It makes us free of all kinds of problems. John 17 and verse 17, sanctify them by your truth. What sets us apart from other people in the world? The truth. We have the truth of God, the spiritual truth that he has revealed to us. Nobody else has that same understanding. They can't have it unless they have the Spirit of God. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. And we will be set apart by that truth. Brethren, it is important. We've got to think about it. How do you stay focused? That's what I've been talking about today. How do you stay focused? Because it's okay to be focused. It's great to be focused. You know, we first come into the church and you're really focusing in on the things. You're really doing Bible study. You're reading every booklet you can get a hold of and the Bible study course and you're reading the magazine, every article that comes. You're really focused. You're trying to overcome and you're thinking all kinds of thoughts about how do I overcome and change and what do I need to change in my life and how can I change my job so I don't have to work on the Sabbath and what do I do Friday nights and you're all focused in on everything like that. But as time goes on, ever notice how your glasses get foggy? Right? Today, we walk in from outside and who's that? You can't see anything because your glasses are all foggy. When we came down, there was ice fog and all kinds of places on the road. You can't see anything. That's what we want to avoid spiritually. Don't let your glasses fog up spiritually so you lose focus. Know what's important. Jesus Christ explains what's important. He makes it very, very clear over and over again. You know, they came up and asked him questions. And he said, the young man, young lawyer, keep the commandments. What? So somebody can come along 20 years later and say, I'm going to go to church on Sunday? Something. See, somehow the focus disappeared. The focus glasses got out of focus or whatever. The hearing got dull. The eyes just seem to glaze over. Maybe you got cataracts or whatever, spiritual cataracts, and you can't quite see it. Because maybe the person doesn't want to see it then by that time. Not convenient. Maybe some considerations. Anyway, it's been a pleasure being down here this weekend. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to get out of Valley View. Greetings to all those online. Certainly hope you enjoyed. All right, have a good day. Let's not freeze up.